Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Els, joined by my pal from a safe distance, Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
And on the bullpen phone, Chris Zook.
You know what? I always, I never figure this out. Hi. Did you say your pal, Brian, but then I'm just the guy in the bullpen.
Oh, you know what? And I guess because you're on the bullpen, my pal in the dugout, and then my pal in the bullpen phone is technically what I'm trying to suggest.
We're friends here.
I think so, most of the time. You know, depending on what Brian spews out of his mouth, but I think most of the time.
Come on, Zook.
Well, I'm gonna get into right away here. I mean, I'm gonna pour one out here for the Blue Jays win total this year from the Caesar Palace. Did you hear about this?
No, Brian? I didn't.
Oh, well, so this just came out tonight. So the Los Angeles Dodgers, their win total is historic. They've pegged it at 104.5. This is the highest it's been since the 99 Yankees, they were saying.
Huh.
The lowest is the Pittsburgh Pirates at 58, which would rival the Marlins when they first came into the league in 93. But your Toronto Blue Jays. The Toronto Blue Jays, they are right in the middle of the pack at 86. And I knew that would set you off this.
No, place. I think 87 or 88 wins is about right.
Come on. I thought you said they were going to get 90 this year.
No, I said that they were going to be the second best team in the American League. But I think I think the American League is that bad that 87 or 88 wins is going to be the second best team.
86 is the win total.
If I was a gambler, I'd be betting the over.
You'd bet the over. Think they're going to be the second best team in the AL. Definitely has to win more than 86 games. I don't care how
diluted I don't think so.
You think.
I don't think so, honestly. I don't think so. I think the second best team in the American League is going to be right around like the 87, 88 wins.
I love this. Mark it down right now. Brian is wrong.
The American League's really bad, Zook. American League is
wins
really
is very
bad.
Low win total.
League is really bad. I cannot stress this enough. The American League is really bad.
Well, I'm going to say this right now. So you are correct about this. The earliest that we get into a win total for an AL team is the Chicago White Sox of all teams at 90.5. And then your Twinkie
under
Michael is at 89.5. And then
that's about right.
Bay Rays and Oakland are both at 88.5. And
that's
Houston
wrong.
At 88.
Mm. Both Rays and Oakland will win probably 81 games this year.
Wow. Anyway, so I'm just,
so
I
those
was
are
a
the
bit
top four AL teams, according to
that's
this
right.
Palace thing. Okay.
Yes.
You know, I mean, bearing in mind, like, what happens if we don't get a full 162? Do they, like, prorate kind of what the over-under would be?
Yeah, by win percentage.
Okay.
No. If they don't play the year, I think they just null the bets.
Okay. Just curious, just in terms of, like, actually, like, you know, if you're saying, like, the Dodgers have this historic one, but they might not.
Right. How can get they get play there if they right if they don't play 162? Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Let me say this.
What are the
I'm
Padres? Sure are they?
I'm sure somewhere the sports books have figured this out, and I'm sure they've got an algorithm on this. So actually, technically, it's the Caesar Sportsbook by William Hill that brought this out. The Padres, so it's Dodgers 104.5, the Yankees at 97, Atlanta Braves at 92, and the Padres at 92 before we get into the AL teams. So that's your top four are all NL teams. Oh, sorry. So
you said the Yankees though.
I know. Well, you know what?
Yankees will probably win 96 games. I think they'll win the AL.
So I was totally wrong about that. But
I like that you're not including them in the AL just to give my Twins a chance.
Well, they seem like they're in a alternative universe. So they can kind of just stand in there. The Yankees are always the evil empire. So they just stand. They're not even in the AL. They're just in their evil empire area. But yeah, hey, your Twinkies are right there, which is good. I mean, I think the White Sox, I think so are them. I just think actually if Brian was saying that the Blue Jays would be the second best team in the AL, they're a little bit behind on this list right now. So they would be 1, 2, 3, 4 fifth. They would be the fifth, sixth. Sorry, I can't count AL teams. They'd be the sixth team. They're listed right now. So Brian, you can make a couple ducats here if you want to put a small.
I don't gamble.
I know you don't, but I mean, I'm just saying, if you wanted to, and you feel that strongly about your team this year, it seems like that's an easy win if they play the 162 this year.
It's interesting to note that they choose Pittsburgh as the worst team.
They're going to be pretty bad. They're going to be.
Well,
pretty
I know they're
going to
be
year.
Pretty bad, but if we're thinking the AL is worse than the NL, don't we think maybe an AL team?
Well, the
team
funny
will
thing about
be...
that actually is Colorado is in second worst at 62.5, and then Baltimore is 64, and Detroit at 66.
Well,
I would have said Baltimore or Detroit.
But the thing is that because the rest of the AL is bad, they'll probably pick up more wins against other bad teams, right? Like the Orioles are bad, but so are the Tigers, so are the Rangers, so are the Royals, so are the Mariners. Whereas like the Pirates are by far and away, the Pirates and the Rockies are probably by far and away the two worst teams in the NL. The rest of the teams are at least marginally competitive, right?
Mm.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. I would say in the bottom half there, the bottom seven, five of the seven are AL teams. So, Brian, that would be sort of, sir, Colorado, Pittsburgh are your bottom end, and then the next five are all AL.
I mean, if everybody played everybody else and it was like a perfectly balanced, equal schedule, then I'd probably agree with you guys and I'd put my money on the Orioles. But because, you know, the Orioles get to also play a lot of other bad teams, and the only other really terrible team in the NL is the Rockies, I could see the Pirates being that bad. I could see it.
There you go. That's I just thought I'd leave with that. We all know what really the big story is this week is go ahead, Michael.
It's Trevor Rosenthal signing with the A's.
Oh,
is that?
Yeah. Of course. I mean, everyone was shocked about that. I mean, my phone was buzzing with that alert.
I know you had like his name on your Google alerts, so
I'm being facetious.
I do want to talk about that one though, because there is some interesting stuff about the
Mike,
deal.
Mike, I think
the
it's too early for us to pick him up for our fantasy league. So
yeah, no, I'm not meaning so much for fantasy, but the fact that it's a 1 year deal paid out over 3 years.
I did not know that.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I was.
How's that working?
So
I
it seems like it's a new one.
It's
but I haven't heard of that. Is that like? That's
well, of course you have. Of course you have, dude. Bobby Bonilla.
Well, that's a different story. Bobby B there has his as July. Is it July 1 every year?
Yeah, it's July 1 every year.
I think it's still got another 10 years to go, which is fantastic. So
I think it expires the same time as the contract we're going to talk about, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
But no, so the Rosenthal deal, so John Heyman from MLB Network, so it's an $11 million deal, but it's $3 million in 2021 and 2022, and then $5 million in 23. And I'm not entirely sure why it's structured this way, but it must be for some sort of like overall salary like payroll thing for the Athletics. But I guess so. I mean, Rosenthal's a Scott Boras client, and apparently he was seeking like a multi-year, like 3 or 4 year deal, but they weren't happy with what kind of they were getting. So they agreed to a 1 year deal, but this, the Athletics, who, I mean, surprisingly kind of $11 million for a closer right now, particularly for the Athletics, is a lot of money.
It's a high end. Yep.
This is a team that traded away Chris Davis and his like $16.75 million salary in the offseason to shed payroll. And they've been all the deals they've done have been small money for, you know, Eunice Maripetit, Sergio Romo, Mitch Moreland. And apparently like the most they were offering was Marcus Semien for 12 and a half. So to offer their closer 11.
I have no idea what the A's are doing.
I wasn't sure what they're doing. And
no idea
with the added wrinkle of this deferral making me wonder why, what they're doing with that. I'll be curious. I mean, this was just, I guess earlier today that this deal was signed. So I haven't seen any details come out about the idea behind it. I mean, Rosenthal had a good season in, you know, limited work last year. He was obviously, he's been recovering from Tommy John surgery and then it had some real kind of issues with like hitting with wild pitches and stuff, but played 13 and two thirds for Kansas City and then was shipped to the Padres and he had 10 shutout innings of relief and obviously a short season, but clearly did enough to get himself a payday. I do want to tip my cap to him for getting paid and especially for coming back from Tommy John. But I'm not sure what the Athletics are doing here with this this kind of signing for this price and
no clue.
Maybe there's something in the numbers that they've found that no one else has found. It seems like an excessive amount for a closer, especially the one that's not.
I mean, it just seems like a classic. It seems like a classic A's move, right? Where they
that befuddles a lot of people.
Well, no, they not that they befuddles a lot of people, but they'll get a closer on a short term deal, and then they'll he'll play really well, and they'll.
And then they'll flip him, right? Sure, no problem.
And then they'll slot Sergio Romo into the closer role for a considerably cheaper price. 41.8% strikeout rate last year, and an 8.8% walk rate for Rosenthal. But yeah, let's turn to the deal that actually
the real one
referring to, and this is the one that. If my math is right, this expires the same year as the Bobby Bonilla deal, and that is of course Fernando Tatis Jr. signing a 14-year extension with the Padres.
I'm so happy about this. I'm so happy about this. He's so good. He's so good, and to see a team, you know, actually go out there and spend the money on the player, and spend the money on the team, and go out there and go and actually actively try and win. Instead of being like, ah, geez, guys, COVID's made it too hard for us. We're just not making any money. To go out there and spend money on a franchise player, not jerk around his service time, actually,
right?
You know, actually try to put together a winning baseball team in the face of the fact that the Dodgers are probably still the best team in that division. It's a big deal. It's a big deal, and I'm so excited and happy about it.
It's a massive deal. What I read about this, there's a couple things about this deal, which is pretty incredible. One is that it kind of sets up Dodgers and Padres for maybe the next decade here about you could have like the Red Sox Yankees on the NL side here a bit. Two, you know, they've been looking for a face of the franchise since Tony Gwynn, right? Back in the day, right? And this is the guy. I mean, not only is he the face of the franchise, he's the face of Major League Baseball, right? He's 22 and he has insane upside. Three,
so much fun.
This is not like, if I'm not mistaken, Acuna, when he signed, seemed like it was a very rebate deal, where this is a true.
And Albies too.
Right. And this is a true. Mark, I mean, mind you, down the road, like in 14 years, it could be a steal for the Padres because who knows what's going to happen in 14 years. But that said, as you know,
this is a superstar deal.
It's a crazy great deal, right?
This is a superstar deal.
It makes sense for both sides, right? One, you know, the Padres lock up their superstar phenom for the next decade and a half. But second, you know, he gets the money, you know, he's set for life. And you
it's
know,
like 25 million a year.
And he's set in, and now you've got like, look at what they've done. And you're right. Here's the bigger part about this is also, it's a small market franchise, right? San Diego was never, you know, they're not the Dodgers or St. Louis or Yankees or Red Sox and all that, but they've basically, the ownership is saying, we are going to go for this. We're going to not only go for this, but we want to win titles. We don't care what the Dodgers are doing or any of the other big, you know, the big six, eight teams out there. We want to compete with them. And this just, not only that, this is what we've always been championing about, is that teams should be going for it. Like, you know, and what you said, Brian, is especially is that they didn't sit on his service time, right? That might have helped in this negotiation, because instead of, you know, kind of, you know, playing games with that, with, you know, like Chris Bryant and other rookies when they were just sitting out there, I think Guerrero was another one, right?
Yeah, no, the Jays absolutely messed around with his service time.
Well, everyone really has, right? Oh, yeah, exactly. But it's pretty much a standard practice. But the Padres didn't. Instead, they put him in an open day lineup, and maybe that helped contribute to set up this big signing, because they basically said, well, in good faith, you know, the Padres, you know, put him in when he was ready. Instead,
well, and they're not even messing around with arbitration. They're just like, no, you're worth it. We're giving you the money. You are worth this to us. We are giving you the money. And that's huge.
And maybe this helps with the negotiations down the road about the, you know, the union and MLB, about maybe some, you know, it's the start in the right direction. This is the first time that a team has really stepped up with this guy. Yes. Before,
I mean, it's one of 30 teams behaving this way. And I would say most of the teams don't behave this way.
Still a start, better than no teams.
Right. It's not like zero hope for, you know, the next deal between the MLBPA and the league. But I mean, most of the teams are still operating in bad faith.
Maybe it sets a precedent, right? And the
I
other
doubt
thing
it.
Is,
but as long as the Dolans still own Cleveland, yeah. as long as the terrible owner in Pittsburgh still exists, you know, we're still going to have it. As long as the Ricketts still own the Cubs, there's going to be teams operating in bad faith.
Sure, but here's the one thing is, Major League Baseball now can market this guy. They know that he's going to be on, and same with the Padres. But I mean, they do at least have, you know, you've got Trout in there for his life, and basically the Angels and Tatis in San Diego and Betts in LA. And these are three of the guys that you know, we keep championing about, that they need to get out there. I mean, Tatis is actually out there in some national commercials now, and hopefully this just leads to more of the stuff. I mean, this is, to me, I'd agree. I know about the skepticism about it, in about the good faith about the rest of the league, but at least this is a positive move for Major League Baseball that the Padres did, and good for them.
Sure.
I mean, this may be like, this is the one organization that's zigging when everyone else is zagging, right?
Too. Yes.
Like this, and it's kind of a remix on Moneyball, right? That like, if other people aren't backing up the truck and like trying to wait out and depress prices, and you see the opportunity to get like really quality players and you're willing to spend, just do it. And then, like, you put together, like, when you look at this team, like, I was looking because they just signed Keone Kila earlier this week.
Good.
Yes. Who's good and is going to just be in their pen.
Right. He's not even going to be a high leverage guy.
He's
their
not even
going to
be a high leverage
nuts.
Guy because their bullpen is crazy. And then look at that starting roster, too, and you've got Clevinger, who obviously is on the IL. But, like, their 1-5 is, like, Chris Paddock is slotted as their, like, starting pitcher 5 right this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
But not only is it crazy, but yeah, I mean, their team is stacked, but the 14 years is really where it's just like off the charts. Right. I mean, the amount he got, I think what is it, 330, something like that.
340,
but 14 years. I mean, that's just an insane commitment. Right. I mean, again, you can do this because there is no salary cap really, and there is no, you know, it's not like the NHL where they're capped at 8 years is the max
and,
deal,
you know, there
right?
might be so. Some questions about, you know, like he'll be 36 at the end of this deal, but that's not like
But that's for another
You don't care about the downside. But you're getting surplus value at every single year up until he's probably 32. So.
I was going to say you're getting like 10 years of like one of the best players.
Yeah, and you're hoping that you're going to get one or two titles at least out of that in his peak times, right? And then by then, you know, somewhere in his 30s that, you know, you can, you'd figure out by then. In 10 years, you'll figure out where you are as a team, obviously, right? But they're all in this year, and it's going to be phenomenal, that division and that and the NL, because that's a natural rivalry that's built there. And it's just phenomenal. It's a nice positive story. We were wondering what was going on here with the hot stove, and then the off season. It's definitely has been cooking now, just as we're getting ready to everyone's reporting into camp.
Yeah, obviously pitchers and catchers reported this week, and spring training is a thing. I mean, obviously, with the proviso that there is still, you know, a lot of people suffering from COVID, and the fact that that's still out there, and there are variants, and anything is a bit of a crapshoot when it comes to these kind of gatherings. But I mean, with knocking on wood, we'll watch spring training and see kind of what happens. Certainly, we might want to pour one out for JT Realmuto, who broke his thumb and may not see opening day after signing coming back to Philly.
That's rough. That's a rough shake. It's unfortunate. It happens sometimes, and it's unfortunate. I hope he gets better soon. He's a good player, and he's fun to watch.
Right, and he was one of the kind of marquee offseason signings. So,
yep,
definitely a bummer. So I know that Brian listens to Tipping Pitches. I listen to Tipping Pitches, the podcast, and this week they were talking about Jack Flaherty and arbitration. And I don't think it's something we had talked previously about, but just the idea of, you know, players going to arbitration and these clubs kind of, it kind of extends from our discussion of like acting in bad faith for most of the team. I hate
arbitration so much.
That, you know, so this round of arbitration for Flaherty, he did win and got some bank. The previous arbitration for Flaherty, who is their best pitcher, I guess the team offered $600,000. I think, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Brian, with the details. But then when Flaherty expressed the fact that he didn't want to accept that and wanted to go to arbitration, that they lowered
their offer to $590
just to spite him.
Yeah. Just be like, oh, you want to take this to arbitration? We're going to offer you $10,000 less just for the trouble of it now.
Just for taking us to arbitration. So, you know, baseball the right way, first of all.
Every single time a player seems to go to arbitration, not every single time, but a lot of times you end up seeing players like, not even just in baseball, but in other things too. Like, it really sours the relationship. Marcus Stroman went to arbitration every single year with the Blue Jays, and it really soured his relationship with them. Every single time he came out afterwards on Twitter, and was like, well, it's nice to see how much the team really values me when they're willing to go in front of an arbiter and basically, you know, talk me down as if I'm not worth the amount of money that I know I'm worth. And, you know, PK Subban in the NHL said the same thing about the Montreal Canadiens. That it really was an eye-opening experience for him. And Flaherty, of course, went to Twitter after his arbitration hearing and posted a screenshot from The Last Dance with Michael Jordan with the quote that says, "And I took that personally," which he should. I mean, the owners are just out there to save a cheap buck, and it's ridiculous. Like, you're really willing to go... Like, you are it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Each one of these teams makes, you know, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars every single year.
Exists in a monopolistic state that, like, the government, you know, funds some of their stadiums.
They have an antitrust law that protects them in the States.
And you're willing to go and basically talk down the players that are making you this money so you can save like $300,000. I don't know, man. It just seems ridiculous.
And then the spiteful 10 grand move. It's just like, is the ridiculous cherry on top of that particular poop Sunday.
And then the other thing is that, you know, and, oh, by the way, why don't we just knock off 40 or so minor league teams? Right.
Yeah.
Because, God, it's so because, mad about that. Because, they're not even called the minor leagues anymore.
Right now. Yeah. And they changed this whole thing. But then they put out something about that we're going to put some raises to the minor league players, which is well overdue. But of course, they did this on a Friday, right? So they kind of hide this. All of this thing on the minor league end is, I just think, is just.
And it's, trust me, as someone who has worked.
We're going
to
get rid of a bunch of people, and then the people that are left get raises.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
yeah, it just makes, but the thing is also just on the backs of, why do they have to shut down all these teams, right? Why do they no? Who's asking for who's obviously they want to save another dollar, all the Major League owners. Baseball and the owners, right? But I mean, for what? Like, again, we're talking,
you're making it harder for your game. You're making it harder for your game to be accessible. You're taking teams away from 40 small town teams in the United States where it'd be easier for kids, for families to go watch a cheap, affordable baseball game where kids can get into understanding, learning, and loving baseball. You are making your game harder to access and get a hold of. You are not only that, but you're souring a lot of people, 40 teams worth of employees' opinions on Major League Baseball. And not only just that, but all the people that those lives affect. You know, and it's stupid, it's short-sighted, it's ridiculous, and it's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, and like you said, Zook, like dropping this news on a Friday, it's the classic, like, bad news
it's
dump.
It's a classic communications 101, right? But it just bothers me, right? Like, you know, to claim poverty off a pandemic is just it's like Brian said, it's just, I mean, Major League Baseball doesn't help themselves ever about this stuff, but I mean, who are they trying to kid here? I mean, you've just destroyed, you know, a lot of this infrastructure in place that was great for baseball. And you're right, Brian. I mean, it's a great game here. I mean, we've got the Gold Eyes here, right? And, you know, we're nowhere near a Major League Baseball team. And it's nice that we have that. And a lot of places are not going to have it this year. And you're missing out on awareness. You're missing out on promotion of the game. And just all, there's just so many positives about, you know, minor league teams. It's also just a good way to access the game.
And as someone who worked for the Gold Eyes for a long time, and this is indie ball, someone who worked for the Gold Eyes for a long time and traveled around and saw a lot of other independent baseball teams and talked to their staff and the fans and all that. Like, a lot of the people that work for these teams don't make a lot of money.
No.
You know, if that's their only job, they're scraping by. They're doing it
for the love of the game.
They're doing it for the love of the game. That's exactly it. They're doing it for the love of the game. And to because they love baseball so much, it just comes across in the game production, and it comes across through the players who are meeting with fans after the game, before the game, you know, actually, you know, running camps for kids just because they love baseball that much, and you, because of that love, it makes it more accessible for people to really get into and enjoy baseball instead of having to pay, get gouged by MLB TV to not even get to see your favorite team because of blackout deals that a local cable company wants you to pay an extra ridiculous amount of money just to get their stupid cable program so you can watch your local team. And if you want to go to a game, you're getting charged three separate mortgages just to order a bag of peanuts and a hot dog and sit in the bleachers.
I love it. Brian's fired up, and we're not even close to opening day yet. This is
no season. This is the thing, you know, who needs spring training these days? Cause like, he's been training all off season.
And I thought the 86 wins was going to fire him up, but I just have to say minor league baseball.
Get him going.
Listen, the Jays could go 0-82 and that's just gravy, man. The Jays could go 0-82 and it's gravy. I just want cheap, affordable baseball to be able to watch and not get blacked out. I can't watch Jays baseball games, man. Okay.
All right. Hold on one second here. So I wanted to kind of, because we've got a couple minutes left here, but I'd mentioned this to Mike. I wanted to make sure we got a little bit in a Goldeye's love here. So they announced the schedule for 2021 this year. And I will say I'm a little bit head scratching a bit here, because right now it says that May 22nd is going to be the home opener for Winnipeg Goldeyes this year at Shaw Field or Park. I'm not too sure exactly what
Shaw Park.
What's the over under that's going to happen, you know, on May 22nd this year?
Well, I mean, they may play the game, but I don't know if there's going to be
Maybe no one's going to be watching you in the stands. That could be correct. I mean, I do at least. I mean, I guess you got to do it, right? If you're going to do it, the Goldeyes couldn't do what they did last year.
They can't
go on the road and just play all the road games this year.
I think over 30% of the province will be vaccinated by then. Right? That's what they're proposing. I mean, whether or not you believe them or not, that's what they're proposing.
That's healthcare workers and people over 90, like if we're counting that, because like
I think at least one other bracket, right?
Yeah, but they, you know, who knows about this new variant, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, hey, I get it that the Goldeyes have to go on. They have to start the season and they can't do the pod like they did last year because they need to, you know, they want to play in Winnipeg, right? And that's their home. But I'm glad they sort of at least announced that. I'm a little bit skeptical if we're going to be allowed to watch them in person anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, I'll look forward to listening on CGNU if they've got a person on in the booth doing play by play, but
probably be Steve again, right?
I have my doubts that there'll be a crowd a lot at that point, just because the limitations on like gatherings.
We should get Andrew on to talk about it if we can.
I guess, yeah, we'll talk to him. We can call them up and ask what the plans are or how they're doing that.
Because I mean,
but the CBC story week about the rollout of the vaccine, like, you know, they're going like oldest to youngest. I'm not going to see the vaccine apparently till August.
I'm not supposed to see the vaccine until like way later than that. I'm in the lowest possible bracket right now because I'm still 29. I haven't turned 30 yet. So
yeah,
my place in line is like in the 600,000s right now, and that's only if they only vaccinate 70% of people.
It's based on that percentage as well.
If it's more than that, then I'm like in 800,000, which means I won't see the vaccine until next July.
You might not see. Get used to being at home for a while, Brian. The one thing is also interesting is because, so what I don't understand is then if they don't have a crowd, how does that benefit the Goldeyes? Isn't it gate driven? Like, isn't this league? I mean, I think
the new streaming service is supposed to mitigate some of that, right? The thing that we talked about with the Aussie baseball they get some of that with.
But I don't know how much that would offset. I mean, that's
a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
The other thing is, and Michael, maybe you can answer this too, because here's the other thing is like, I mean, what about like concerts or anything? Like, you know, stuff that you're having thousands of people at.
Not
other than, right, exactly. So even if it was like, I mean, is people going to show up? Are people going to be feeling safe about it when it's going to happen? Like, I mean, that's the thing to me. It's like,
well, I certainly won't go to something like this until I'm vaccinated.
Right. Exactly.
No, I'm not. I won't.
Right. I mean, I would think a lot of people would be in the same boat. I mean, why go through all of this and then put yourself in jeopardy, you know, for a baseball game or a concert, right?
Those are two of my favorite things to do. But
exactly.
Like,
this is right. I mean, you know, this is why we have a baseball show and on a music station, right? But
I was actually doing the math and thinking about it, and I realized that 2020 was the first year in my entire life, my entire existence on this planet, not going to a live baseball game.
You know what's funny? So baseball, I was going to say, I thought you were going to go concert because actually got a concert in early last year. So I kept my streak going for you're right.
Yeah,
you're
the right. only year in my entire life, like, because my parents took me when I was a baby. Every single year, they took me to at least one Goldeyes game, and
I've been taking them since they were infants. Sure.
Yeah, the first year of my entire life, I didn't get to see a live baseball game, and I was really sad about it.
And
on that dour note, it's the perfect reminder to tune into the pity party.
That's right.
Right, boy. You know segues. That is a good one. Boy, you just put down the pity right there. Holy. What do you got coming up on the pity party? What are people looking forward to this week?
There's a new single out by Sports, and I'm going to be playing a couple tracks off of a really great new album called Fruit Island from a Toronto-based math rock band.
All right, well, that's coming up at 1 p.m. Of course, stick around noon for Democracy Now!, and we'll be back next Friday. Thanks for tuning in to the Bench Jockeys.
Strike three, you're out.